Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, where bustin' makes us feel good. Who you gonna call when the world freezes over? Join us for our spoiler-filled review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire to find out. What's up, geeks? I'm Kev, and this is the Geekcentric Podcast. We're the weird old guys who buy strange old things. Okay, well, that's only kind of true. But we are a podcast focusing on the world of movies, TV shows, games, toys and collectibles, and all things geek-centric. So grab your Slimer popcorn bucket and join us for all of the chilling details of this sequel to the successful 2021 reboot-quel, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Warning again, this review will be full of spoilers. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire stars McKenna Grace, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, Celeste O'Connor, and Logan Kim, alongside Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts, and a returning William Atherton. And what writer-director are you going to call when you want to follow up the successful Ghostbusters Afterlife? Well, you'll start with Jason Reitman, but when he turns you down, you'll call Gil Kenan. The film is playing in a theater near you. But before we let you know if it was worth braving the freezing cold to check out this fourth installment in the beloved franchise, I could never do this alone. Much like the Ghostbusters themselves, I'm going to need all the help I can get because it takes a team to tackle the paranormal peculiarities of the motion picture world. First, he doesn't collect spores, molds, or fungus, but his toy and action figure collection is humongous. It's Darcy.
Hello, hello.
And he might not be the missing keymaster, but back off, man. He's a podcaster. It's J-Law.
Yes, I am. How are
you? Hey, what's up, gentlemen? Are you seeing things running through your head? Is there an invisible man sleeping in your bed?
God, no.
No, thankfully, yeah, that'd be not. Very disturbing.
I was going to say I wish, but that's for a different podcast. So last night we, as I said, braved the chilly weather. It was very apt weather for the movie Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Nate and I bought our Slimer popcorn buckets. He dared pour popcorn into it. I figured I couldn't get my hand in Slimer's mouth, and that would have just been... I would have been distracted the whole movie had I even tried. So I kept mine in pristine condition because... I didn't want butter and crumbs, you know, stuck in the corners of that thing and then slam it on a shelf.
Rightfully so. Rightfully so. Especially if it's sitting on a shelf and it's just going to collect all this oil and grease. It's just
if any popcorn bucket should be oily and greasy, it's Slimer.
Yeah, no, that's what Nate said. Sure, that totally that's makes a good sense. Point. Yeah, that does make sense.
You know, I know we made the joke 1,000 times last night, but if you have a slimy popcorn bucket, as long as it's not the Dune one, you could be doing worse. But no job is too big and no fee is too big. So why don't we just move right into from the formalities and get into this? Let's start with our initial thoughts on the movie. Justin, now, what'd you think?
I didn't know really what to expect going into this movie. Obviously, as you mentioned, the reboot-quel from 2021 was successful, but it did its own thing. And I was expecting that this was going to be very much an adventure, which is what I had hoped for because, you know, they've established this new set of characters in this new, I guess, world, if you will, for the Ghostbusters. And now it's just a matter of taking it further. However, I feel like it kind of fell into the trap of feeling overly generic. And I think you said it best, and I'm going to probably steal something that you're going to say here, but it went for more family adventure and less of like the sci-fi. I know there's always a little bit of like that element of horror, but there seemed to be more of a spiritual element to it. I was looking forward to a refreshing new adventure for the Ghostbusters, and we got that more or less. I just feel like a bit safe, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, after Afterlife, which was like a huge homage to the first movie, this one I was kind of expecting to be more of a homage to that second movie because it kind of seemed like we were getting set up with the whole team coming back together. Maybe we're going to get a bit more nods to that. But it, to me, it wasn't as good as the first one. It's still a fun romp. I mean, Paul Rudd being Paul Rudd and charming is always fun. It is a fun, you know, adventure. But it, like you said, it did kind of fall into that generic sequel tropes where they were introducing new characters just for the sake of it and bringing back other ones and kind of weird ways, like the way that they reintroduce some of these characters. It's like, oh, that's kind of an odd choice considering what happened in the first movie. So yeah,
and like, and to your point, like the way the original cast is featured, they were handled so much better in the first movie And they feel kind of shoehorned in this one. Now, granted, they are Ghostbusters. They're all working for the same cause, if you will. So they're going to be around. But I feel like, especially as we get towards the end of the movie, they're very much just shoehorned in. They have this moment where they're all like suiting up. And I get it, it's like this superhero moment. But I'm like, didn't we already do this? Like,
yeah,
in the last movie? And wasn't it better the last time they did it? Like, I thought for all intensive purposes, I knew it was to be expected that they were going to be in it. But even from the marketing material, I was very surprised how heavy-handed the original cast was going to be. And I thought they were just going to kind of be sprinkled in a little bit more. Now, Ray is obviously a little more integral to the story and to kind of understanding the lore of the threat, if you will. But I was just really surprised at how heavy-handed they went with the original cast. But then they were just kind of like, you know, at one point Beckman just walks in. He's just like, it's good to be back. I'm like, where the hell
were you? The world's about to end. This is the apocalypse. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, they're smiling Beckman. Like, oh, sorry, I was busy conducting one of my, you know, shady science experiments and thought I'd take a break and come help you guys.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but then not do anything but deliver one good snappy one-liner, and you know, fire a useless proton pack, and that's
and
about
then
they
all get
they
like
did.
Exactly, and then they're just like, sort of like pushed to the side, right? I feel
quite
like
literally they're pushed to the side of the room, not killed by this monster, just
right.
sort of put behind some like this is a monster we're supposed to be terrified of and scared of, and we've seen his destructive killing power. At two different stages in the movie. Then he comes in here, and these people are literally fighting him off, and this monster's just like, I'm not going to kill you, because, you know, we need you to stay alive for the end of this movie, but I am, you know, I just, come on, silly.
I know. Like, again, it just felt really heavy-handed, and I think it just left me feeling like this movie was just overly safe. Like, I did say when we came out, I'm like, I don't really know what people were expecting, because there's already been, like, a little bit of like negative reviews around it, but you're seeing people who are Ghostbusters fans really just enjoy it for it being a Ghostbusters movie. Mm-hmm. That's what they expected. But I can see how critics and other people who might have been expecting them to go a little bit more further, you know, this might feel just a little soulless, really, at the end of the day. It just feels kind of like empty and hollow. It's more of an idea of just sticking to something that's more safe and driving this movie based on people's nostalgia around the original movies. That's mm-hmm. that's literally what it was.
Well, and I think one of the issues there is that they kind of used up all of the nostalgia really, really well in Afterlife.
It was so good.
And so in this one, they kind of just resort to remaking the first movie.
Yes.
Just not nearly as well. Like, it's literally follows so many of the beats, even bringing back William Atherton's character to be the guy trying to stop the Ghostbusters and shut them down and being the cause of releasing the monsters. And it just felt like the first movie, just not nearly as good. And I think one of those issues was, you know, you talked about it briefly there, just that, you know, Afterlife did this perfect job of blending that 80s comedy from the original while also giving us a bit of a family adventure. And this one just goes way too hard, in my opinion, to that family adventure.
Yeah.
It was too kiddy. And like you said, safe for a Ghostbusters movie. And they tried nothing new here. And that was just what I felt the whole time watching it, unfortunately. I never immersed myself into a new Ghostbusters adventure. All I thought was, well, that's not what that character would have done or said originally. Or, you know, why didn't this character make a better joke here or whatever? It just, you know, outside of one great Paul Rudd line at the beginning, when McKenna Grace says, you know, I've got a ghost to bus. And he's like, okay, that was cool. That was the way she said that was cool. It's like, okay,
yeah.
Now we're getting into that fun humor. And I just didn't find it was there. Patton Oswalt does a good job with what he's given, you know, but it just, it wasn't the sharp, witty writing that we got from Jason Reitman in the last one that fit the tone of the original so much better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you said it best there. It, you know, the first one really nailed translating the humor from the 80s movies while also bringing over the nostalgia of those characters and telling a new story so well. That really does. That's a rare thing to see. I think we even talked about it then. It was so rare to see a reboot like Afterlife actually be as successful as it was in terms of being fresh while also feeling, you know, nostalgic and, and feeling very reminiscent of the past movies. Whereas this now shifts the story now, as you said, to more of a family adventure. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that they definitely deviated from what was successful in Afterlife to kind of, I think, try to maybe re-jerry-rig the audience who would go and see this movie, if that makes sense.
I mean, to me, I think where, like, we're talking about the, you know, all the characters and the jokes not hitting, but I think what really drew me out of it was this, the story that's set up, like, at the end of Afterlife and Zedmore being like, I'm going to give you guys, you're going to come over and be Ghostbusters for me. You think there'd be more, you know, working together, but we go this movie and the four of them are just on their own in the firehouse, and then Zed and the other ghost core or whatever are in the secret lab somewhere else doing all these crazy tests that you think that these characters, that McKenna Grace, the scientist that she is, should be involved.
She should be there
in the
she
study.
She should be there.
And she's not there at all. It seems very out of it. And that's the fact that
not the girl from the diner who had no showed us nothing in Afterlife that she had a fondness for science and stuff.
And then she's
just,
we see her there, and she's an intern, and that's the one explanation we have to why she's there now and not in Oklahoma where the first movie was. So it's very weird how, again, they brought back these characters. And again, I love podcasts in the first movie, but this one where they just, he's like, oh, I'm lying about being at the science camp and I'm just an intern at Dan Aykroyd's shop. It's just, didn't feel like it made sense. They were just like trying to ram these characters into this movie because they were already there. And it's just, that's where it's like, that's disappointing, because the first movie, they came together so naturally. And in this movie, they're so forced together. It's really taking you out of it. And again, as a fan of James Acaster, he doesn't, he's a great British comedian. He was given nothing to work with. And
He was a little serious, wasn't he?
Yeah.
More serious than I expected.
Not at all was expecting for
this guy supposed to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's disappointing when they introduced some new characters.
He came in funny, and he was, you know, when
he's
inspecting the trap, and he's like, oh, you know, like he's clearly bothered by their presence and whatever. I'm like, okay, he's funny. And then that was about the last time he was funny.
Absolutely.
It was just a weird story, basically. Again, they're introducing all these new characters and bringing back all the characters, and none of it made sense as to why it was happening.
Yeah. If you had them working with Winston, and then right at the beginning, Kumail Nanjiani's character brings this orb to Dan Aykroyd. It starts reacting weird. Shit starts to go funny. And then they all have to sort of come together because this orb is causing weird shit. Instead of like, they're all sort of doing their own thing and coming together unnaturally and then not working together when things actually started to go crazy. It was like everything happened in reverse almost in that story. And so it felt unnatural. It just, it didn't make sense from a storyline. It's like they had 10 ideas, threw them in a hat, pulled them out one by one, and put them in the script, and the order didn't matter as to what happened. And then they filled in rationale to make it work, and they did a bad job of it.
You know, we're talking about Ernie being the sort of, I guess he's like the Nick Fury, or even maybe the Tony Stark of the Ghostbusters, which, again, there's aspects to this movie and to this world that are very interesting. You know, like, even off the top when they're, you know, going through the history of the Ghostbusters and stuff like that. Like, in that moment when you're watching these news reports and this news broadcaster talk about it, you realize, you know, again, the Ghostbusters world is it's a world that obviously mirrors our own, where these characters exist. You know, the way they've used like the music, the famous music video with the original four as part of like, that's what made the Ghostbusters big, and intertwining all of that. It gets super meta, and I liked how they were creating that parallel. And then you go further with this idea that, you know, one of their former employees, he's got tons of money, and he knows he just wants to do things right. And here he is investing in the Ghostbusters. And I think that was really interesting. But to your point, Darcy, the way they left things off, it was like they were all going to be a big team together. Mm-hmm. And then when we get here, it's like, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're doing the day-to-day grunt work, you know, the Spanglers, they're going around saving New York, while Winston is, you know, working behind the scenes, building some, you know, great big vault for all of these ghosts, and they're studying ghosts like they're animals in a zoo, and you know, they're doing all sorts of stuff. And it's like, why, like, it's almost like they just thought to introduce that as like something as like an ooh, you know what I mean? Like a moment of like, oh, rather than introducing it right off the top and like, you know, mixing it all in. Because like, I think at this point, if they're not all working together in the same facility, though, what is the point?
Well, yeah, something goes terribly wrong and they cause a bunch of damage to the city and they're, you know, being charged and arrested, and in comes Winston's character to be like, what are you guys doing out there? And it's like, you left them unsupervised.
Yeah, exactly.
Untrained, unqualified family. You left them with nuclear reactors on their back to go fight ghosts. You know, I would have preferred that at the end of the last one, they want to fight ghosts, but there just aren't any. They've caught them all. They've caught all of these spirits, and there's nothing to do, and they're worried about their funding for this program that they're working on. They want to develop new technology, but is there even a reason? Then the ball comes into play, and things go awry, and they have to convince, like, we have to keep going. We have to figure out what's going on, and this is why we need to be the Ghostbusters. Like, it was just, and, like, he's got this ball from his grandmother's secret room. There's, like, it's this beautifully ornate room with dozens of artifacts, and he brings in one thing from it, and it's like, oh yeah, there's this secret room in the back of my grandmother's apartment, but I'm gonna sell this ball to you for $40.
Yeah, I happened to grab the most, like, important thing in the room just because it was in the center.
What was the most accessible? Yeah, exactly.
And what was weird about the whole, you know, introduction to that ghost team where they're investigating ghosts, and the fact that they already talked about how all the ghosts seem to be afraid of this orb. I thought they were going to be building up to, like, oh, they're going to team up with ghosts to fight another ghost. And that would have been an interesting storyline. And it felt like it was going that way. And then halfway through the movie, it's like, oh no, the ghosts are afraid of the other ghosts because he can control them. That's it. And now he's controlling them to get out. And it's just like, that seems so, like, you could have done a different way, gone a different way, especially with where they introduced the character where McKenna Grace is make a connection with a ghost that isn't, she doesn't want to bust her type thing.
Yeah.
It was setting up this whole, like, you can work with some ghosts to fight the great evils, and some ghosts are harmless, but it went down a different, completely different path. And it was just a bit disappointing after, again, that initial setup. I thought that was the route they were going, which would have been a refreshing take for the Ghostbusters franchise.
Yeah. Like, I think, to your point, that would have been a really, like, interesting way to go about doing this story than the more generic route that we got.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, if we are going to talk about, like, at least some things that did work, because I don't think that this movie was a total bag.
I did want to say, like, we've kind of flipped our usual script here. We started with what didn't, but was there anything
I think there was some stuff that worked, and we've talked about it. Like, again, I don't think that there's anything to say bad about the cast. I think they were all really great in their roles. I think even someone like Finn Wolfhard, who was barely in this movie, he was still fine. But again, that's just the way this movie's written. And I think the first portion of this review very much talks about how much we're, you know, just unhappy with the way the story was treated, and some of these characters were treated and sort of shoehorned. He's an example of that. Podcast is an example of that. I really do love McKenna Grace. I think she's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Very much like from the first movie into this follow-up, she is the heart, she is the sort of emotion. There's such a sincerity to her performance that feels authentic and real. I talk about it all the time. When actors don't seem like they're acting, it's a beautiful thing. And I think she fully embraces the character of Phoebe. And then juxtaposed to that is Emily Allen Lynn. She plays Melody. She's the ghost that has this connection with McKenna, or is using McKenna, as we would then find out. It was so predictable. I thought there was something there. But their dynamic, I liked what they were doing there. Not just the idea of, like, ghosts and relationships and connections. I also think that they were also talking about the way relationships look, you know, two girls, you know, and is it romantic or platonic? We don't really know it. And they never really answer that. It just, there's a special connection between them. And I love that. I thought that was really, really cool. And yeah, like you mentioned, Paul Rudd, it's really great. Like, I thought he had a really great arc, you know, even though at the end there, she does call him dad and then, like, kind of takes it back. That whole moment in itself just felt so shoehorned in, but I did like his reaction. I did like his sort of, like,
she called me dad.
And it was like, for the character to have that moment, you could see they had to give that closure. So it felt very earned, but, you know, he's great in everything he does. I find Paul Rudd can't go wrong. I liked Dan Aykroyd. I thought he's sort of showing his, almost in a way, kind of like Phoebe, this idea of, like, of being, like, sort of so wrapped in what they love and what they're so passionate about that they're kind of disregarding other things in and around them that may cause them to make mistakes. And I think that that's very apparent, and that's why the two of them have such a connection that you see through this movie, where they're kind of like asking each other questions and kind of like motivating each other. But yeah, those were the things that I did like. I think the story really doesn't do justice to this cast.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with you there. I think the performances are great because they're all willful participants. They none of them seem to be phoning it in. They all seem very happy to be here. It's just what they had to work with that was really the issue, you know? So there are still little glimmers throughout where you're like, ah, that's a great moment for that character. And that's a fun Ghostbusters moment. But yeah, it's the potential left that just really soured me a little bit on the movie as a whole, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I guess we could sit here and dissect this thing or, you know, like a scientist in a secret lab that aren't telling anybody about. But I think we should probably move on. I hate to sound like William Atherton's Walter Peck, but I am shutting this whole thing down. It's time to wrap up this podcast. So let's give a summary of our thoughts and give our final scores. Today, we'll be scoring out of 5 severed monster horns. Darce, why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, again, I enjoyed this movie. It was exactly what I was expecting when I was coming into a sequel to Afterlife, and especially seeing that the writer had changed. I knew we weren't going to get that solid, again, blend of that 80s humor with the family adventure. It did lean more that family adventure out, but it's still an enjoyable movie. Again, Paul Rudd and the whole cast do a great job. There are some funny jokes in it. Like, there were moments where we're all laughing in the theater, but it's just wrapped in this, you know, lackluster story that leaves you wanting more, especially with some of the implications that you kind of almost feel earlier on in the movie with the way that it's going, and it kind of doesn't fulfill any of those promises that they're almost teasing. So again, it's an enjoyable movie, but doesn't come close to the first one. So I'll be giving Ghostbusters Frozen Empire 3 out of 5 severed monster horns. Was that what it was?
That's what it was. Yeah, Darce, I'm with you. I think there's some key words to take away from what we've been discussing. You know, this movie obviously is capitalizing on the nostalgia of Afterlife, but it feels more shoehorned. Whereas everything else in Afterlife felt, Kevin, as you mentioned, organic, felt real. It felt actually natural. We were moving in a proper progression. I think this story felt it was almost too big, in the sense that it had too many characters that needed to be in this. And you know, I think that was in part because of the threat, a massive threat. Therefore, you needed a massive cast to potentially be there to round it out. I guess that's the logic behind it, but it just didn't work because really at the end of the day, most of this cast outside of, you know, the core four, even I would say just outside of McKenna Grace, they're all shoehorned in and to a certain degree. They all just are there for the ride.
Yeah, they have no impact
exactly on
the final decision.
No, and McKenna Grace is again flawless. She's perfection. I think she's such a talented young actress. I look forward to seeing more of what she does. And you know, it's definitely not the worst sequel that I've ever seen. But it definitely doesn't live up to what Afterlife did, and I didn't expect it to. I think the other thing is that they didn't need to forcibly put the original cast in. It should have probably just stayed central on the family, them trying to carve out their own paths as Ghostbusters. And yeah, you have, like, you know, Venkman is in the world, and you know, Ray is in the world, and maybe he pops by to see how they're doing, but you didn't need to, like, forcibly shoehorn them in so that they had a purpose in this, which was no purpose at all. So again, I'm just going in circles here about the sort of lack of attention and focus. It's just a muddled mess. But again, there are some glimmers. There are some things that I do like. I would want to see another one, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. I just hope that they can learn from this and understand what they can do. And it's not about the nostalgia. We've done that, right? Don't force nostalgia. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you got it. You did it once. Don't force it again. And this feels like what they're trying to do with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is just forcibly give you more nostalgia. And it's like, okay, we already got it. So mm-hmm. For all those reasons, I am giving this movie a 3 out of 5 severed demon
monster horns.
Monster horns. Sure. There we go. Monster horns. Tall, dark, and horny. Let's go. Yeah, exactly.
No, you guys nailed it. While I'm always for a bit of nostalgia, especially from something as, like, wonderfully ingrained in pop culture as the Ghostbusters, this one just fell flat. I kind of liken it to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, Whereas Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was a perfect end to a beloved story, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was just an unnecessary nostalgia trip for the sake of it. It was an unnecessary addition that did more to tarnish the legacy of the original films than it did to enhance that legacy. And I'm not suggesting this was Crystal Skull bad. Again, I just don't think it was necessary. It didn't tarnish the mythos of the new and old characters from Afterlife, but it didn't add many memorable moments or lines that I would add to my favorite Ghostbusters memories. I'm generally down to see my favorite characters back on the big screen in something like this, but if the movie wasn't going to do anything to further enhance the story or bring it in a new direction and was really just more of the same, Afterlife did a way better job to end the Ghostbusters story than this did to continue it on. And I think my issue is that they didn't utilize the legacy characters in the right way, as we discussed, and they focused far too much on certain aspects from Afterlife that weren't what made that movie work. You know, it was an over-reliance on the kiddie stuff almost. When the minions start to overshadow Gru in Despicable Me, the Despicable Me movies suffer because of it. And here the marshmallows get way too much screen time while recycling all of their same jokes from Afterlife. It was just that bit done again throughout this whole movie. You know, it's like, you know, they were trying to be two Men in Black and not Ghostbusters enough, having all these quirky aliens with different powers and stuff. And it's like, that's not what the Ghostbusters was really all about. Then you add in the whole ghost love story. Like, it just, I liked elements, but it kind of felt a bit like Christina Ricci falling in love with a ghost, Devon Sawa. So you might as well call this movie, you know, call this movie Despicable Casper, but don't call it Ghostbusters. You know, and while McKenna Grace was the right call to be the lead in this movie, and it's always fun to see a Venkman one-liner or two, the moments that made the original Ghostbusters classics and the elements of nostalgia from Afterlife that worked so well in that film were just way too few and far between here. This is certainly the most family-friendly Ghostbusters movie, and maybe that will help bring in a new generation of bustin' fans.
I think so.
But that didn't resonate with this lifelong fan.
Yeah.
And as a result, this certainly winds up as my least favorite of the four canon Ghostbusters movies. And I'm right with you guys. I'm giving this 3 out of 5 severed ghost monster demon horns. Well, we came, we saw, and we kicked this podcast's ass. Thank you so much for joining us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe and leave us a glowing review. If you don't, you might just end up in a ghost trap. We'd love to know your thoughts on the movie. Does it live up to the originals or Afterlife, or did it leave you feeling a bit cold? You can hit us up at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com, or if that's a bit like being fired from a job that doesn't even pay you, reach out on our socials. Justin, where can they do that?
Well, they can reach us out. They can reach out to us on Twitter or X at GeekcentricYT or on Instagram at WeAreGeekcentric.
And we have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows. Check out our review for Netflix series 3 Body Problem, as well as our review of the first 3 episodes of Marvel Animation's X-Men 97.
Woo!
We also have some fantastic interviews with the cast and crew of that hit animated series. In addition to listening to those wherever you check out podcasts, you can also watch those on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/geekcentric, along with all of the other incredible interviews we've had the pleasure of conducting over the last few years. Plus, we are nearing the end of our watch club for The Bad Batch, so be sure to check those out as they release so you can hear our geeky thoughts and predictions for that beloved animated series. When you want the latest in movies, TV shows, games, toys and collectibles, and all things geek-centric, who you gonna call? We have so many exciting reviews and interviews coming your way over the next few weeks and months, so stay tuned for those. But until then, Justin, Darcy, thanks for joining me. And as we say,
laters.
Get home safe, guys.
Peace.